Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to talk about happiness. I'm going to give you a life lesson. And I want to start with four questions, because I want to focus on the relationship between happiness and work. So, please raise your hand if you are happy because of your work. Lots of people. Okay. Now raise your hand if you are happy despite of your work. Okay, fewer, okay. Now your hand if you're unhappy because of your work. No? And people are unhappy in all circumstances? No? Because I would think that those people would be right. I think it's very, very difficult to achieve happiness, and I'm going to tell you why that is the case. Okay, if we are thinking about, I'm a philosopher, I've got to say that. So if we are going to think about happiness, if you see how people use the word happiness now in our society at this moment, there are some striking things. People seem to think, for example, that everybody can achieve happiness. Happiness is just around the corner for everyone. And if you're not happy at this moment, you could change some things in your life, and you could achieve happiness, well, in the near future. So this is a kind of a democratic idea. People also think that we not only can achieve happiness, but that we have to be happy. Okay, so there's an imperative, there's a duty. If you are not happy at this moment, at this very moment, you should take all efforts to achieve happiness in the near future. And if you don't do that, you will become a loser. Okay, and in our society, we don't have a place for unhappy losers. It's true. Yeah. But you're all happy. So why bother? Okay. The third characteristic is that we seem to equate, I think these are all stupid ideas, but we seem to equate pleasure and happiness. So if I ask you, are you happy? You could say something like me, for example, yes, I'm happy because I feel well. And we, in philosophy, we call this pleasure. Pleasure is a positive emotional evaluation of what's going on at this moment. So if you're delighted now, you feel pleasure. If you're irritated, you feel pain. And the fourth characteristic is that I think that we try to achieve happiness in two sectors of our life, namely love and work. Okay, I can tell you something about the relationship between love and happiness, but we have had some speakers discussing their private lives then, and you know that one third of all marriages will end in a divorce, so that is really a very problematic idea. So I don't argue about it. I'm going to talk about the relationship between work and happiness. There's also a personal reason why I do this. 3 years ago, I had kind of a burnout, and it's very difficult for a philosopher, because if you had that experience, you know that your life, your mind just blocks, so it's just impossible to think. And when my mind started thinking, working again after, I think, 3 or 4 months, I thought, well, I've got to think about what happened. So I started reading Aristotle. That's what you do if you're a philosopher and if you want some... Yeah. Because really, this guy had some very nice ideas about happiness. And I want to share some of these ideas with you, because maybe you get a better grip of what's going on here. So if Aristotle would be here, for example, and he would be here on stage, he would ask you, do you work? And then you would answer, for example, yes, I work. And then he would ask you, but why do you work then? And you can come up with several answers. For example, you could say, well, I like to work because I can develop myself, or I earn some money with it, gives me status, job satisfaction, whatever. And then Aristotle would say, okay, but why do you need the money for? Why do you need the status for? And at the end, you would have to come up with an answer like, well, I think I need the money or the status or the satisfaction because I think in the end it makes me happy. Okay? And Aristotle would say, okay, then we can conclude two things. First thing is happiness is that thing that we want for itself and not for something else. That's very abstract. The second thing is, Aristotle would say, that everything we do it because we think that it will add to our happiness, because we think that it will make us happy. Okay? So I was in the crowd here during the break, and I saw lots of people here having this nice, fancy iPhone, this iPhone 6, you know. And why did you buy it? Well, because you thought it would make you happy. That's nonsense, of course. It only gives you moments of pleasure if it doesn't bend. But there is a very... But this is a very, very tricky thing. I already said that we seem to equate happiness and pleasure, but these are two different concepts. For example, if this is your life with a beginning and an end, you will have certain moments of enjoyment or of pain. So maybe at this very moment you are sitting here in the audience and you feel irritated. You know, you think, oh man, what's going on? So you are experiencing pain at this moment, okay? But it could be at the same time that you're happy. Why? Because happiness is not an emotional evaluation, but happiness is a word that we use to evaluate our life in a grander scheme. So when are you happy? Well, if you can give a positive general evaluation of your life. Do you get it? Other things also possible. Maybe you feel enjoyed now, beautiful day, nice audience. But the moment you go out of the building, you know, you suddenly realize that your life is one big mess for a very, very long time. So you can feel pleasure at this moment, but being unhappy at the same time. Aristotle actually would think, just as you seem to think, that everybody can become happy in their lives. We have to work for that, but happiness is indeed, according to Aristotle, around the corner for everyone. He could think that because he has an implicit idea about the structure of the cosmos. So you're familiar with this. According to the old Greek, you know, you had the universe. In the center of the universe is the Earth. On Earth, there are we human beings. We are rational human beings, so we are the highest beings here on this Earth. And above us, there's God, and God is taking care of us because he guards the structure of the cosmos. So structure is a foundation for happiness. And this is an idea that is also implicit in many religions. So if you're a Christian, for example, you could come up to me, you could ask me, Menno, can you tell me how I can become happy? And then I would say something like, well, just, you know, just read the Bible, study your religious tradition, look for the will of God, and submit yourself to that structure, and then you will achieve happiness. Okay? The problem is, however, that we do not experience ourselves and our universe anymore as structured, as Aristotle did, or as many religions seem to do. Nietzsche famously proclaimed God dead in the 19th century. And what's the consequence of that? Well, the consequence is that there is no structure, no meaning, and that we are just alone. You know, we don't see ourselves anymore as the highest rational beings here on this planet, but we see ourselves as a bunch of lonely thinking animals in the corner of a bubble, okay? And there's no God above us, watching us, taking care of us, and assuring that the world is a meaningful place. Okay, and this has really a profound impact on the way we think about our lives and the way we think about happiness. I think that we now, at this moment, only have two options. The first option, and I think that's your option, you seem to have decided that you can become your own source of happiness. Okay? If we can't rely on an external source like God, then we have to become our own source. The second option, that's my option, we could just conclude that happiness is impossible. Okay, let's first explore your option, and then we will see that that's nonsense. Okay. How does it look like? Well, very, very heroic. So when we are being born, there is no telos in Greek. There is no aim. There is no essence. So we don't know what we are, what we have to do in life. And the idea now is, and you see this in Nietzsche, you see this in Heidegger, you see this in Sartre, in Foucault. You see, we have to develop ourselves in our actions and in our decisions. So what you are, who you are, what your essence is, that's not pre-given, but you develop that in your life, okay? So you get sentences like, you have to become who you are, that's Nietzsche, or your life is a project, Sartre, or why don't we see our life as a work of art, Foucault. Okay, and that's very nice, you know, because then you're the maker of your own identity. And where do we do that? We develop ourselves mainly in our love relationships and our working places. So work is important, not only because it gives us an income or status, but also because it's the place in our society where we can develop ourselves, where we can become who we are. So work for us has a very deep existential meaning. Okay, and this leads to burnout and depression. And that's not only my idea. I borrowed this from a famous German philosopher, Byung-Chul Han. I hope I pronounced his name right. He's from South Korea. But there is this imperative. You know, we have to be free in our society. We have to develop ourselves. We have to be authentic. We have to be funny. So if you look at Facebook, for example, do you know Facebook, okay? Yeah. Yeah. And then you see these pages of people, you know that these are boring people, you know, but they are smiling and they are happy and whatever. So we are lying. We are lying, and we have to do that, because if we are not happy, if we're not special, if we're not authentic, then we are not existing in a certain way. So we have to be free. There is this imperative that we have to do it, there's a duty. So that leads to self-exploitation. So if you're working, you don't only have to do your job so in order that you get some money, but you have to do it in a very special way, your own way, and it has to be recognized by others. So you become your own slave driver. Okay? 50 years ago, we had the boss. Now we are ourselves the bosses. So that's very difficult. And the biggest problem is that there's no redemption. So if you fail, and I think we will all fail somewhere, maybe not in your job, but then as a partner, you know, we all feel, you cannot blame anyone but yourself. And that's really tough. So there are lots of reorganizations at this very moment. And so you can imagine that you're sitting there and talking to your manager, and you realize that your manager is going to fire you. So then you say, why are you going to fire me? You know, I've worked very hard for this company, 10 years or so. And then he said, yeah, but I looked at you and at your colleagues last year, and your colleagues took a lot more chances than you. They were more creative than you. They were more fantastic. And then you say, yeah, that's true. But we were understaffed last year, and there were huge problems, and I had to use all my energy and time and focus to keep things running. So it was no space for creativity or whatever. And then the modern manager would typically say, yes, that might be the case, but maybe you should set your priorities in a different way. Okay? Some people have had this conversation. So that's the problem. And you're getting fired. And the problem is not only that you've got an economical problem or a social problem, but you also have an existential problem. You know, because if you fail at your job, you also fail as a human being. So I think that this whole ethics of self-exploitation leads to burnout and depression, already said. So I think that the whole idea that we can achieve happiness is just bullshit. And I borrowed this position from a very famous German philosopher called Arthur Schopenhauer, 19th century, and he wrote a fantastic essay called On the Suffering of the World. You really should read it. And he defends this position. We human beings, are not suited. We are not made for happiness. Why? Well, because our sensitivity to pain is very high, and our sensitivity to pleasure is quite low. Okay, what does he mean? If I am here during the break in the corridor, and you feel delighted here, maybe, and you want to pay me a compliment, so you go to me and say, Menno, thank you for this talk, really inspiring, blah, blah, blah. And I will feel good, and I will smile for, I think, 4 or 5 minutes. Okay? But maybe you're sitting here, and you're irritated. And you will see me in the corner, and you will say, Menno, this was shallow philosophy, man. There are no arguments in your whole talk. You are only playing on emotions. You're a 19th century nihilist. And I will feel a lot of pain. And I will remember that not for 5 minutes, but for 5 days, 5 weeks, 5 years even. And every time I have to give a talk, I will have heard this voice in my head, you're not a very good philosopher. So I am quite sensitive to pleasure, but I am very, very sensitive to pain, and all that also counts for you. Now you can think, oh, this is a bit depressive. Okay? But the second problem is that there are lots of sources of pain in our life. Okay? And we don't talk about it. That's interesting. So, as a kind of a conclusion, I'm going to show you a general picture of how our lives look like. So this is your life. It has a beginning and an end. And the start is quite nice. So if you're around the age of 10, you will form friendships. 16, 17, first sexual intercourse, always interesting. You will form relationships that are quite durable when you're 17, 18. And when it's 19, 20, you will... That's nice, you know. You leave your parents' home, you're co-living on your own, you have lots of freedom, not much responsibilities, so that's really great. And then you go to university, that's always interesting. And if you finish your study, then you apply for a job and you get hired because you're young, flexible, cheap, nice to look at. Yeah. And they will cherish you. They will exploit you, of course. Huh? But it feels good. It feels good. So you're a young potential. And then you meet somebody else who's quite nice, and you settle down and you buy a car and a house, and maybe you produce some children. And then that's the age of 28. Whom of you is 28 or younger? Okay, so one third. Okay, because after this, everything goes downhill. Yeah. Yeah. Enjoy it while you can. You will have these ideas that pleasure is not the same as happiness. At your work, you will have your first reorganization. I have one reorganization per 4 years. You will be overtaken by younger colleagues. Incompetent colleagues will become your boss. Your children will have all kinds of social problems, learning problems, school problems, whatever. You don't survive at your job anymore, so you need external help. That's called a coach. Then you're 40, 45, not you, but other people are cheating, their wives are men. You will see endless runs of divorces. You develop a new passion. Yeah. Okay. There are all kinds of background problems, you know. You don't have no pension left. There are all kinds of earthquakes. I live in an earthquake area. Strange diseases. You buy a motorcycle. Yeah. Your children have all kinds of problems, identity problems, career problems, drug use, whatever. At the age of 50, 55, 60, you will have mental problems, severe mental problems that are ruining your relationships. You are getting older. Your body is declining, so you need surgery. Your family will disintegrate at that moment, so you don't speak to your brothers and sisters anymore. Your parents, you have to bring them to an elderly home. You sit there and you see your future before you. They die. That's always a problem in that dysfunctional families. Then at the age of 70, 75, your peers die, your friends die, and then there's an implosion of your inner circle. So if you are 75, you will have a funeral once in 3 weeks or so. Then you will have a disintegration of your personal identity, so you don't recognize anyone anymore. And you end old and lonely, and you can be glad when somebody recognizes you or when you will be visited with your children. This is our life. Okay. So I think, as a conclusion, that we should not aim for happiness. I think it's the best to reduce our unhappiness. And in order not to leave you too depressed, I've got 4 tips. They won't help. No! First tip, Lucretius. The best is not to be born at all. So if you're planning to have babies, just think back, okay? If you're feeling unhappy, please know that this is the rule and not the exception. Have mercy and be kind, because we are all losers. I think this is an important rule. And the last one, refuse to work without people who do not share your sense of humor. Thank you very much.